Valley fever can be difficult to diagnose. It resembles influenza in many ways, but its effects typically last a lot longer, sometimes for up to 6 months. Research shows that at least 25% of community-acquired pneumonias diagnosed in ambulatory patients in Arizona are caused by valley fever. Work is being done to improve diagnosis of the illness, and that was part of the discussion at a conference over the weekend. Dr. John Galgiani is a University of Arizona professor and the director of the Valley Fever Center for Excellence. He says misdiagnosis of valley fever remains a challenge.
I hope it's getting better. It's very hard to be sure. It is not so much better that it's obvious to anyone. So it's just a constant challenge to have doctors start to realize that it is as common as it is, and that they have the opportunity for making specific diagnoses if they have people with the symptoms that valley fever causes.
How much is the additional attention, whether from congressional task forces to the big article in the New Yorker magazine earlier this year, how is that going to affect whether major advances in treating or preventing valley fever can be made, and can be made a little bit faster?
Well, I think getting some better understanding of this in the media has been valuable. I think getting congressional interest certainly brings attention to the problem, but the next step, of course, is for doing something about it, and congressional interest doesn't always move quickly to action. And I think since this problem is so much in Arizona, the numbers are 2/3 of all U.S. infections occur in Arizona, and actually most of those, maybe 80% of those infections, occur in Maricopa County. That it's really more a it's really our problem, and if we don't actually act on it, maybe it's hard to understand why others aren't as well.
There was a recent article that the use of some sort of DNA test might be a faster way to diagnose valley fever.
Well, I think it's a useful alternative way for diagnosis. My understanding of this interest, the recent press releases from Fresno, is that it's a DNA test which may complement or supplement looking for the fungus in respiratory specimens, such as by culture. And it, if it's positive, it's certainly a very specific test, so it's useful if it's positive. It is, at this stage, not a kit. It's a procedure that laboratories can do in their laboratory, but it isn't something you can just buy from a company and institute in some other laboratory unless that laboratory takes it on as a specific test that they validate themselves.
So is it part of an advancement that even if people don't know enough about it should say, well, that's a good sign that there is some advancement being made even if this test isn't the one? Can we look at it that way or no?
I think it's a good sign. I think it's the fact that people are trying to add new diagnostic modalities is that there's perhaps increased interest in doing that.
And what about skin tests, similar to a TB test? What can you tell us about that?
Yes, that's actually something we learned at the conference this weekend. There had, for many years, been a skin test available, which tells you if you've had the disease in the past. But that went off the market some 12 or 15 years ago and has not been available to clinicians or patients to find out whether they've ever been infected before. But this weekend we learned that a company in San Diego has now gained approval at the center, at FDA to do that, and they're going to proceed with the licensing. And my understanding is it should be available this year. And I think it's a very valuable move forward because if you have a positive skin test while you're healthy, it means you're very unlikely to get a second infection in the future, so that down the road, if you become sick, it's very unlikely it's going to be due to valley fever since you're already immune from your original infection.
In many cases we've heard of where people have a spot on their lung and they didn't realize that, why would they have this? And in many cases it turns out to be valley fever. So going forward, is that a diagnostic tool then potentially?
So the biggest piece of information you get with the skin test is that you've had it in the past, if you're healthy. And we know that most people, the vast majority, if they get over their valley fever infection, they never get a second infection. So having a positive test gives you information about the likelihood you're ever going to get valley fever again. That said, you mentioned nodules in the lung. It's very hard to know whether that skin test relates to some new process that's seen in your lung. It could be that, in fact, that nodule in your lung is due to valley fever, or it might be due to a cancer. And I'm not sure that the skin test is going to tell people which way to go on further diagnostics.
Can you give us a little bit about the science of something like this? What does a test have to consist of in order to make it so it is something that is usable and reliable? In essence, what is the test searching out when it touches the skin?
Yeah, so the test is very similar to a TB skin test. A little bit of an extract of the fungus that causes valley fever has been standardized, and that's given intradermally into the thickness of your skin. And then about 2 days later, it's looked at, and if a bump forms, that's because you are developing a reaction to those antigens by the lymphocytes or the white cells that have memory that they had seen that before. And that's measured with a millimeter ruler and figured out the size, and if it's large enough, it's called a positive.
How closely will you be watching the summer monsoon? We've talked in the past about the kicking up of dust and along that I-10 corridor. Have you been able to make connections, this idea that when we have those enormous dust storms or haboobs or whatever people want to call them, that then at some point in the next couple of months following that, we do in fact see more cases of valley fever?
You know, it sounds so reasonable that you have a big dust storm and then you're going to see a lot of cases 1 to 3 months later because the incubation time is 1 to 3 weeks. It turns out that if you actually do the measurements, you don't see that. Even with the spectacular dust storms that have been, you know, on national television in past years, what we have found that does very gives a high degree of prediction is rain in the season before the dry spell and then rain during the season. If it rains before the season, you're likely to see more cases, and if it's raining during the season, you're likely to see fewer cases. And so it's a great tool, but in fact, since you have to know the rainfall during the season, it doesn't work too well in giving long-range prediction. You have to actually know after the rain, you'll pretty much know what you should be seeing, but it's got a ways to go. But it's really pinned more on the rainfall than it is on dust in particulate.
Dr. John Galgiani is director of the Valley Fever.